Traveling the Vortex. Side Trip.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hi, this is Sean from Traveling the Vortex, and I wanted to welcome you today to my talk about Star Trek. We've had several requests from many of our listeners over the last year and a half that we've been doing Traveling the Vortex for some explanation and some insight into another universe, in this case, the world of Star Trek. As the humble but resident expert on the series, I thought I'd offer my two cents, and for what it's worth, hope to give you an insight into the series. Now, for some background information, for those of you that don't know, Star Trek started in 1966, the brainchild of Gene Roddenberry. The show was pioneered as a wagon train to the stars. And what that meant was there was the show Wagon Train, which was an old Western and about a group of people that were, you know, heading west into the new frontier. Star Trek was seen as to be the same type of show, a group of explorers heading into the great unknown. NBC picked up the show and started production. Little known among outside the world of Star Trek is that it was actually co-produced by Desilu, Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball's studio. They were very big fans of the show. Obviously, Trekkers are moaning in disgust right now. It's like, dude, really? You had to tell that story. The show ran for 3 years on NBC to varying degrees of failure. Star Trek was never a ratings buster. It was never popular. It moved around the schedule quite a bit. It did not fare well in its time slots against any competition, and ultimately was unceremoniously canceled not once but twice by the powers that be. Now, that has obviously come to rue that decision, the executives, because Star Trek's gone on to obviously have a very long-lasting career. Star Trek is one of the cornerstones of science fiction. If you are a science fiction fan in general, you probably should be familiar with Star Trek, at least have a basic knowledge of the show. To my Doctor Who fans, it's a little different. Doctor Who is witty and kind of odd and has that whimsical quality to it. Star Trek generally takes itself a little more seriously, and they very much like to deal with weightier issues than perhaps Doctor Who. A lot of times you will find social commentary. Sometimes it is disguised under the guise of this science fiction entertainment, and sometimes it's very blatant and hits you in the face. But for the most part, the show's entertaining. After it was canceled, came the realization of syndication, which was new at the time. And because Star Trek had survived not quite enough, I think the bare minimum is usually like 100 episodes to go into syndication, but Star Trek had survived for 79 and kind of felt it was close enough. So years after its debut and cancellation, the show began popular again on college campuses across America. And it was a cheap show for networks to pick up. So you began seeing a lot of local affiliates that would run the show in reruns. And it kind of found a new audience in the 70s, long after it had been canceled. That led to an attempt at a second television series, as UPN, or the Paramount Network, would have been the fourth major network. This was back in the days before Fox, so it was just ABC, CBS, and NBC. And Paramount was interested in starting a new television network, and they were going to have what was called Star Trek Phase 2 at the heart of their syndication programming schedule. It did not fly. The network did not wind up moving forward. But because they had already commissioned scripts, sets, costumes, and rehired a bunch of the actors to attempt to move forward on this, Paramount made the decision in no small part based on the success of Star Wars in 77, that they would move forward with a movie. Star Trek the Motion Picture was launched and began a trend of successful film franchise. There have been 11 Star Trek films to date since 1979, the most recent being the pseudo-reboot by J.J. Abrams in 2009. God, I'm showing my age now. I don't remember when that one came out most recently. 2 years ago. 2009. So, and another one's on the way. People ask me why I like Star Trek, and it is, the message was always hopeful. Star Wars was my gateway drug. I was very big into Star Wars. I loved Star Wars as a kid, and as I've said before, the first time I saw it at the Cheap Drive-In here in Topeka. So we were outdoors at night, and Star Wars filled this, you know, to what was a, you know, a six-year-old, this massive screen. I mean, it blotted out the sky, and because it was on a drive-in, anything that the screen didn't fill, the sky took up. So when that Star Destroyer passed overhead, it really felt like you were in the midst of this, you know, something impressive. That started my fascination with sci-fi, and I began to devour just about everything I could get my hands on. Anything that was popular at the time, other movies, including Close Encounters of the Third Kind, The Black Hole from Walt Disney, and Star Trek. Now, my first exposure to Star Trek was not the television series. It was not the movie. It was actually the animated series that Filmation produced in 1973 or so. It ran for 22 episodes, featured the original voice cast, and it's done very much in the early Hanna-Barbera kind of talking head animation. Where, you know, anything we can do to not animate this would be best. Which, ironically, really kind of seemed to fit Star Trek's format. There's a lot of deep discussion in this children's science fiction show. And I got up one morning and asked my mom, what is this that I'm watching? What is this cool show? She took one look and went, oh, that's Star Trek. And from that moment on, I devised that I needed to do more research into this. I found a local affiliate that was running reruns and began watching them. And a love affair was born. Star Trek was always about hope. This was a world that had survived its current problems. And for a child like myself, I was born in 1973. And I don't remember, honestly, much of the 70s. I remember gas prices being high, and I remember standing in line to get gas and being bored out of my mind. I remember a little bit about something called the Iran hostage situation, but not much. But I very well remember the 80s. And if you're like me and a child of the 80s, you remember the threat of nuclear war being a very real threat. It's almost laughable today because the threat seems to have turned into this terrorist worry, or this idea of one madman with a bomb, which is not that it isn't scary, but it is a different feel than to have a nation state, as the Soviet Union was in the 80s, that for whatever reason had such different ideology than the rest of us that it was a genuine concern that our leaders were really poised with fingers on the button. And there's a whole nomenclature. Finger on the button doesn't necessarily hold the same weight now that it did then. And so there's a lot of people maybe that, you know, Star Trek's going to come across as hokey. But not because it was a product of its time, but because I'm a product of my time. Living in that kind of environment and growing up in that and being afraid, not necessarily constantly living in fear, but just knowing that today's the day the world could end. Today's literally the day the mushroom clouds could sprout and this would be it. It was just something you had. It was just something you dealt with in the back of your mind. And so to have a show like Star Trek come along and show us a future that was not only you know, possible to reach, but seemed somewhat probable that we would survive this, that we would move on, that we would put aside our differences, and move out into the stars. That was a great source of hope to me as a kid. Star Trek was very much about acceptance. It didn't matter if you were black or white or yellow or green. You were welcome here. Star Trek was very much a sense of unity, a sense of community. This was a family. And maybe they didn't get along all the time, as families are wont to do, but they continued to move forward for the sake of the family, and they knew that for the good of each other. And the original series always had that sense of mischievous fun. There were many episodes where tongue planted firmly in cheek, they would go forth. And I think that's where you see a lot of the humor and subculture that's built up around Star Trek now comes from the, you know, the idea that the red shirt's going to die, or that Kirk's going to sleep with the alien woman, or that, you know, some of these are very obviously TV tropes, but they became tropes out of a sense of formula that worked for the show. And as these actors progressed and their characters progressed, you kind of began to feel that they were out there having fun, despite the weighty social issues that they may have been incurring. Obviously, Star Trek was popular enough to spawn some numerous television shows. We had Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek The Animated Series previously, which I had mentioned, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, and the newest Star Trek Enterprise. So there are five television series, six if you count the animateds, that are out there. And the sheer episode count can be a little daunting for new people. If you're interested in giving Star Trek a shot, and I highly recommend it, I'm not going to, as with Doctor Who, I'm not going to sit a newbie down and say, start at episode one and watch 40 years of television. I mean, it's just, it's impractical, it's improbable, and it's more than a little daunting. But I've put together my top 10 list of the original series, in hopes that this will kind of be your gateway. And I do think you should start with the original series. I think Star Trek as a whole is a fun franchise. I think it's an institution. And I think it is not necessarily one of those that got better with age. As the shows went on and the new series came out, they began to fall into what I felt was kind of a creative trap. They had many of the same writers and executive producers on the newer series as, you know, they just kind of carried over from one to the next to the next. And for my money, the episodes begin to feel a little stale. I will say that with the caveat that I still haven't finished all of the new series. I know, big Star Trek fan that I am, I have not seen the end of Deep Space Nine, even though it's probably my favorite among the shows. I've not seen many of the episodes leading up to the end of Voyager, although I've seen the end of Voyager. And as of yet, I haven't watched the end of Enterprise. Part of that comes at a time when there was just a gluttony of Star Trek on. It almost felt like there was too much going on at the same time. And part of it was just a life intrusion into things that I enjoy. I wasn't always able to sit down and do what I wanted with them. But one of my favorite things is to introduce new people to things, and I'm looking forward to sitting down with Mel and watching these. And we've watched all of the original series. We've watched all of the animated series. We're actually in the process now. There's a seventh show out now, a seventh series, called Star Trek Phase 2 or Star Trek New Voyages, where it's a fan-based production that has kind of picked up the mantle to continue the Enterprise's original five-year mission in a season 4 and hopefully eventually season 5. They built a set in their garage, and they, you know, hire actors as can be, and wound up getting a very generous donation of time and effort from folks in the special effects community in Hollywood, who said, "Yeah, we'll put your special effects in there." The show's produced with a budget of—literally, they have $1 million an episode in special effects, and it looks fantastic. It very well matches up with what we've seen on Star Trek. And even despite the fact there are new actors playing, you know, the roles of Kirk and Spock, it feels right. And I think that's the most important thing. The spirit is there. And so while the letter of the show may not be, the spirit is there. And we've enjoyed those immensely, too. But I'm looking forward to getting her into some of the others. But for those of you who are kind of interested, now, when you talk original series, there are several top 10 lists that kind of circulate around, and most of them are the same. Most of them wind up being very, very, very in line with what the fans kind of say this is what you should do. Mine doesn't vary too much from that, although I think my number one will surprise some longtime fans of Star Trek because it's not the number one that most people would pick. Number 10, we'll go backwards in order to set this some suspense. Where No Man Has Gone Before. Now, this is actually the second pilot, which is an interesting sub-story to Star Trek, is that Star Trek was, they commissioned the pilot and showed it to the NBC executives who said it was too cerebral, which basically meant that the audience wouldn't get it. It was too smart for their audience, or so they claimed. So they wanted something that was not necessarily dumbed down, but something with more fisticuffs and less thinking. For the first time in history, a second pilot was commissioned. Now, Where No Man Has Gone Before is a little different. Because it's the second pilot, not all the pieces are in place. Leonard Nimoy's Spock is not quite the refined alien that we come to know. The uniforms don't look quite right. The crew has not all settled in, and some of them are suspiciously absent. However, I think it's a fantastic jump-off point because I think it shows you the potential of what the show can be and will be, and it's got a great story, and if current internet rumors are in any way factual, this will be the possible jump-off point for the next film that J.J. Abrams is directing. Number 9 is Balance of Terror. This is a great episode. It introduces the Romulans, which in the course of the episode we find are offshoots of the Vulcan race, which Mr. Spock is, which immediately leads to a sense of, distrust among the crew. It is best described as probably a World War II submarine movie. There's a cat-and-mouse game being played between Kirk and the Enterprise and the Romulan commander on board the Bird of Prey as they hunt each other and attempt to destroy one another. And it's a very, very well-done dramatic episode. Number 8 will be a surprise for, I think, some fans. A Taste of Armageddon. This is one of those episodes that stayed with me. I saw this as a child. And it involves the Enterprise visiting a planet that is basically at war with another planet in their system. However, they've civilized the war. It's run by computers. The computers generate battles and calculate losses based on the destruction of what would have happened. But it's all done digitally in the computer. However, there is a twist in that they treat these casualties as very real. And if you lived in a section of the city that was hit by an atomic bomb in the computer, you would then have to report to a disintegration station because you died. And, of course, chaos ensues when the Enterprise is hit by an orbiting platform. And Kirk and his crew are told, well, you need to come down and submit yourselves for dematerialization and be destroyed. It's a great example of while Star Trek has the Prime Directive, which says we will not interfere in the affairs of other races, this is kind of a great example of you're doing it wrong and Kirk's solutions to that. Number 7, A Piece of the Action. This is a very fun story. It's played for laughs, tongue planted firmly in cheek, and a lot of fun about a starship that visited a planet and left behind some books on agriculture and how to improve your species and your society and things of that nature. One of the books they left behind was a retrospective on Chicago mobs in the 20s in Earth. The Planetary Society decided to model their society after this book, and so they crew beams down and finds Chicago mobs, because this is the book. This is what they think society should be based on. And it's a very interesting what-if premise. It's also a lot of fun. Number 6, A Mock Time. This was really the first one to showcase Leonard Nimoy's Mr. Spock and give him some much depth of character. He came kind of a runaway hit on the show, and with his alien presence, which interestingly enough is one of the things NBC was originally concerned about. They thought with his pointed ears he would look very devilish and probably not play well on conservative television of the time. A mock time, we reveal the idea that Vulcans go through a Ponfar, a burning, almost insanity, mating season every 7 years, and Spock's time is now, and he has to go home to take care of business, and the things that ensue from that. Very well done episode. It also features some of the more famous set pieces. Kirk and Spock have a battle, which has been spoofed many times in movies since, probably most notably by Jim Carrey in The Cable Guy. That comes from this episode. Number five is Space Seed. Now, Space Seed is kind of the big one. This is the one that Ricardo Montalban stars as Khan, a product of late 20th century genetic engineering who escaped into space after ruling one-fourth of the Earth in the Eugenics Wars, which was a time of tyranny and oppression. They don't necessarily realize at first that this is Khan, this one and the same, and he attempts to take over the Enterprise and kill Kirk. It set the stage for what is arguably the best of the Star Trek films later, Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. Needs to be seen. Number four, Mirror, Mirror. Every science fiction show worth its salt has done an alternate universe story where our heroes wind up in a dimension that's slightly different from our own, a parallel world. Even Doctor Who's done it with Age of Steel, Rise of the Cybermen. Mirror, Mirror is arguably the best of any of these stories. It is not a parallel universe per se, but an opposite one, in which a transporter malfunction sends the crew into this alternate universe where the Federation is not a peace-loving exploration, but a savage dictatorship bent on destroying anybody who gets in their way, and their attempts to escape this universe. Again, became one of the huge science fiction tropes. Leonard Nimoy's Mirror Spock sports a goatee, and so from this day forward, anytime you have an evil twin, it must have a goatee. Number three, The Trouble with Tribbles. Now, this is one that's normally at the top of people's lists, depending on how their sensibilities lie. It is also played for fun about an accident that unleashes a series of furry little critters all over the Enterprise. It's a difficult one to describe. You have to see it in order to really appreciate it. It is very funny. It's filled with humor. And a lot of it's not overt, which is one of the things I really appreciate. Watch the scene where, there was a fight between Kirk's crew and the Klingons, and when Kirk is interrogating Scotty to find out what happened. That particular scene is among my favorites. Number two on my list is The City on the Edge of Forever. Now, this is the other one that's normally at the top of people's lists if you like your Star Trek a bit more serious and dark, as opposed to the lighthearted Trouble with Tribbles. It was written by Harlan Ellison, obviously a giant in the science fiction literary sense, and deals with a time machine. Dr. McCoy inadvertently is injected with an overdose of a drug, which drives him insane. He escapes into this time machine and does something in the past which obliterates all of the crew's history. There is no Federation of Planets. There is no Starship Enterprise. There is nothing. Kirk and Spock travel back in time to find him and stop him from doing whatever he has done. And it results in one of the most gut-wrenching endings in television history. My humble opinion, but it's there. Which leaves number one. Now, my number one pick, I think, is on many people's top 10 list, but I doubt many people would put it at the very top. The Doomsday Machine. This, to me, is quintessential Star Trek. It is my all-time favorite episode. Now, having said that, there are episodes on this list that are better. There are episodes on this list that are funnier. There are episodes on this list that are probably better written, better acted, better performed, however you'd like to put it. This episode, for me, is Star Trek. This is what it's all about. There's a destroyed, crippled starship that the Enterprise stumbles upon. Commander-driven insane, an entity that has destroyed his ship and killed his crew, and the Enterprise is next. This features all of the classic tropes: a last-minute escape, daring hijinks, some fantastic special effects, especially if you are watching these in the new remastered Blu-ray set, which just a moment to talk about that. When they announced they were going to remaster and create a Star Trek special edition, I was not sure how I felt about it. I was very on the fence. Obviously, George Lucas's special editions of Star Wars have kind of polarized the fan community, and a lot of people aren't sure whether they liked them or not. Paramount announced they were going to do something very similar with the original Star Trek episodes. They went back, they remastered them, they cleaned them up, but then they tinkered with or improved upon all of the visual effects shots. Or at least a large majority of them. Now, 99.9% of these shots have been massively improved. These are the shots that there is no doubt in my mind the effects company would have done had this technology existed at the time in 1966, 67, well, 66 through 69. Again, the spirit of what was going on is there. Maybe not to the letter, but definitely in thought. This is how this should have turned out. There are, I have some very, very, very small handful that I disagreed with. Not that they were cringe-inducing. None of these are going to be the blatant mistake of, you know, Greedo shooting first. again, I have zero complaints. These are phenomenal. If you were to find these on Blu-ray, I highly recommend them. And if you've been on the fence as a fan trying to decide whether or not it was worth it, yes, it is. And the main reason behind that is the Blu-ray set puts forth, you get basically four versions of the episode. You get Star Trek on Blu-ray in high def with the special features of the new effect sequences. You get the original uncut as aired episode in high def, and then you get both versions in standard def as well. So that to me is totally worth the price of admission right there. But Doomsday Machine is an unbelievable piece of television. It's got fantastic music, again, one of those scores that's used throughout the series, but this is where it originated. It's got fantastic performances, and William Shatner in particular is at the top of his game in this one. Two honorable mentions to my list. These are great episodes, but just not ones that I felt like I could honestly put in the top 10. Devil in the Dark, which is William Shatner's favorite episode and deals with a creature that is killing off miners. It's a fun episode. It's really well done. It's very good. Just not quite in my top 10, but also very deserving of a look. And then a surprise to a lot of people, I'm sure, the Galileo 7. This is one that's kind of almost lampooned and ignored by the Star Trek community at large because they just don't consider it to be a very good episode. I think it's a wonderful character piece, especially between Kirk and Spock and the decisions that they make. Spock's leading an away team. His shuttle crashes on this hostile planet filled with gigantic apes. They are under fire and under threat for every minute. Meanwhile, Kirk is being pressured to abandon the search for his first officer and friend because they have a plague situation that is demanding of their time elsewhere. So I think it's a very worthwhile episode. Again, especially with the new effect sequences on the new Blu-ray set. They've really generated some masterful work there. That's going to be it for this. I hope you've enjoyed listening to me prattle on about Star Trek for half an hour. If this gets some good feedback, maybe I'll do another one and kind of point you in the world of some Next Generation or Deep Space Nine gems, but I wanted to focus on the original series for now and hopefully generate some new fans out of this. If, as always, if you have any questions, comments, things that you liked, things that you didn't, things that you disagreed with me on, feel free to send us some feedback. You can reach me at Sean, S-H-A-U-N, at TravelingTheVortex.com. You can also visit our Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/TravelingTheVortex. You can reach me on Twitter, where I am at Sean, or excuse me, at Vortex Sean. Yes, at Vortex Sean. I forget sometimes where I am. You can also reach us through www.TravelingTheVortex.com, which is our Doctor Who site, not a Star Trek site, but a Doctor Who site, and there's a link where you can click, and there's a Google voicemail number as well as other things under feedback. So I hope that you have enjoyed this. I had fun telling you about it, and hopefully we will see you again on the podcast.